Linoleum Knife.
Linoleum Knife.
A podcast of the cinema.
That's as harmonic as we get.
I had to take that. Wait, I'm going to take it out and make it stop and put the other one back.
That could totally happen later. I don't know why during the show.
I just need to, everything needs to be organized. I need to put that soul-to-soul cassette back into the player so that I may listen to Keep On Moving.
So that you may continue to have big fun.
My ka-single of Keep On Moving while I wash the dishes. Do you know how many times I can listen to the ka-single of Keep On Moving while I do dishes? By soul-to-soul?
I would imagine, for one rack?
Yeah.
Probably be two or three?
All of them. I can listen to it all the times.
That's great.
You flip it over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the instrumental version, and you can just make it. You can sit. You can karaoke yourself to Keep On Moving by Soul to Soul.
I have.
Then when you're done, mm-hmm. you turn it back over, and you just keep on. You just keep on moving.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hence the title. I have that.
Not Back to Life.
No.
I like Back to Life.
Mm-hmm.
I like Keep On Moving more.
All right.
It was the first one I heard.
No one knows what we're talking about.
Soul to Soul. Everyone knows what Soul to Soul is.
Gaze of a certain age will remember
just gaze
soul
the
to
world.
Soul.
The world was in love. Remember what time when the world was in love with Soul to Soul?
The UK, maybe.
No, the world. The United States was in love with Soul to Soul. I saw them on Arsenio.
Well, point taken.
Everyone did. You remember where you were?
We were all watching Arsenio.
You remember where you were when you saw Soul to Soul on Arsenio?
I don't think I ever saw an episode of Arsenio.
What's wrong with you?
You didn't
see Mariah Carey make her television debut on Arsenio?
I did not.
You didn't see Madonna ask Arsenio if he slept in a queen-sized bed? You don't remember that?
No.
Where were you?
Not watching Arsenio.
Come on, man.
I was not watching much. I think the last time I regularly watched late-night talk show hosts was in college. And that was pre-Arsenio.
I don't know. It just was on. It was on TV. My roommates would have it on. And I'd be like, I've had a very long day. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to eat some ice cream and watch Arsenio. Delight was on.
Changing the channel would be too much effort.
It was, you know, you get into that Papasan chair from Pier 1 Imports that your roommate bought because he had that kind of taste. And you sit there with your ice cream and you watch Arsenio.
And you didn't even get to, you even mentioned Bill Clinton playing the saxophone, which is like the
I didn't care about that.
The one.
Not interested.
Indefatigable Arsenio pop culture moment.
Yeah, sure. I just didn't care.
Did you make the woof 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 sounds from the Papasan chair?
I had ice cream in my mouth.
Oh, okay.
There was no woof woof woofing with ice cream in your mouth, sitting in your roommate's Papasan chair. He bought two of them. He sat in the other one.
So you look like Gomez and Morticia.
We
Adams.
Did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I had like three roommates. It was a huge house,
uh-huh.
and we all lived there. And everyone wanted to sit in those Papasan chairs because ugly they may have been,
but comfy.
When I left that house and I got my own apartment, my very own apartment for my very first time with just me, I did not have any Papasan chairs. And part of me missed them, but the other part of me said, no way.
Never, ever.
No, I'm saving my money until I can buy that Eames chair that I saw at the antique mall, which is exactly what I did.
Well, there you go.
I didn't have a stick of furniture.
This is riveting, especially for any first-time listeners. So sorry.
Are you a first-time listener?
You stumbled into this.
This is a podcast of the cinema where sometimes we also just talk about whatever we want. Get used to that right now.
There's a lot of that, yes. I'm Alonzo Duralde. I'm the film critic for TheWrap.com and What the Flick on YouTube.
My name is Dave White. I'm the same. I'm just like him.
But for other outlets.
For movies.com.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's be clear.
I'm not the editor of anything at The Wrap.
No.
I have never been on What the Flick.
You've been invited, and you have curtly refused.
I wasn't curt in my response.
Okay, you graciously refused.
I graciously refused because I just don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like... You go off and chase that rainbow. But just remember, success is nothing without someone you love to share it with. You remember that.
Thank you, Mahogany. Now flash me that baby grand of yours you call a smile.
I've never felt the... Here's the reason. I don't want to burn Ben Mankiewicz too hard on a camera. Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, really. Could he withstand the blinding light of me?
I think he'd manage.
I don't know.
He has shared the spotlight with the Tippi Hedrons of the world.
Right. I'm way fatter than she is. Yes. I could totally take him.
I was thinking today, for some reason, of the Tippi Hedron Collider. Like, no one's made that joke. But I don't know where to take it.
Wow, you just did.
Yeah,
that was
I know.
Good.
Good
comedy joke.
It's the kind of thing that lives on a note card, and somewhere, sometime...
It is never used.
The Tippi Hedron Collider
stays on the card.
A joke
it stays on the card in the file. And then eventually, one day, the joke writer goes, eh, that was never good. And then they throw that away. That's how that works.
Look, there's no judgment in brainstorming.
Until you say it to me. When you say it to me, then comes the final ultimate decision on how good it is.
Uh-huh.
Or not. Yeah, so I'm really just being considerate of Ben Mankiewicz.
I see.
You can tell him I said that.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure he'll thank me
mm-hmm.
for it.
No doubt.
He'll be grateful. I'm sure he'll send you back the note. Dave, thanks.
Thanks.
There's not many movies to talk about this week.
Nope.
One big one, one little one, and one that we didn't see. We did not see Belle.
Right, but one even littler.
I will be seeing Belle, but I have not seen
even Belle. One littler one that I did see.
What was the littler one?
François Ozon's Young and Beautiful.
Why don't you talk about that one first?
Sure.
Because I want to know about it.
A movie
I'm a bit hit and miss with this dude.
A movie whose title I cannot say without immediately going to the bridge of Love Will Keep Us Together. So that's been annoying all week. I am a fan, for the most part, of him, but I don't like all of his
films.
I'm
a fan-ish. And I hate to sound like that dude, but I'm a fan of the early ones.
The early funny ones?
Yeah, the early perverted ones.
Right, yes.
Those are the ones.
Sitcom.
That I'm most into.
Water Drops on Burning Rocks.
Yeah.
And Criminal Lovers.
Yeah, those are terrific. And they gave me an expectation that I don't see fulfilled.
Well, look.
All the time. Under the Sand. Mm-hmm. Is so great.
But, you know, look, it's like when the people who saw the early Almodovar movies and thought, oh, he's going to be like John Waters
and Espanol. I know, and he gets to change and grow and do whatever he wants.
Yeah. I don't think Ozon is playing safe by any means. He's just doing he's doing something different than what you maybe initially fell in love with.
Right.
I'm not crazy about this one.
You, the super fan.
I'm not a super fan. I'm a fan.
You just said you were a super fan.
I did not. You putting that in my mouth. It's maddeningly vague, frankly, this movie, which can work as a choice, but I think in this case it's just annoying.
Who's in it? What's it about?
Nobody that you've ever heard of.
Say their names. They deserve to have their names said.
Okay, hang on. I gotta dig that up because I didn't, she is indeed... Jeune et Belle, as the title promises, this leading lady.
Marine Vaxth.
I'm going to guess, like, former model, perhaps?
She looks like it.
I wouldn't be
surprised.
How
do you say that last name? Even in French, how do you say that last name?
How do you spell it?
V-A-C-T-H.
Oh, Vaxth. I guess. I didn't even know they had T-H in French.
Too difficult. Fix that, Marine Vaxth.
Yeah. So... Marine Vaxth plays Isabel, and at the beginning of the movie, she's on holiday with her family, she turns 17, and she loses her virginity to a, like, hunky young German tourist.
All right.
Charlotte
Rampling is in this?
Charlotte Rampling shows up at the very end. Oh, she's the one name in the film. She's in the last scene. Okay. And the loss of the virginity is portrayed with about as much... passion and glamour as Jennifer Jason Leigh's in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Nice.
It's ouchy. She's not having fun.
It's ouchy.
It's ouchy. Because, you know, it's
no,
my...
No, I don't, no.
It is my, my understanding...
that it can be ouchy.
That it generally is ouchy.
Oh, really?
All right, for the ladies.
Ladies, you'll have to tell us.
Well, here's what I've learned from watching movies directed by women and gay men. Generally, the first time, there's not a lot of prep from the partner.
Yes.
They just sort of hop right in there, and it's like, ow, 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 and then it's over.
Right.
That's how it's portrayed here.
Okay.
Then they go back to Paris, and suddenly she's turning tricks.
Really?
Yes.
She immediately becomes
a
prostitute.
She is immediately, bam, yes, like high-class call girl, pretending to be 20, using her mother's name as her hooker name.
Interesting.
Doesn't have a pimp, does it all through some website.
Belle du jour.
Kinda.
All right.
But Belle du jour, you at least got some idea of her inner thoughts and, you know, like why, what drove her. No clue. Nothing. You get nothing in this movie. And so, you know,
now I want to see it.
The encounters themselves are kind of interesting. And, you know, the
I like vague.
It sort of gets into,
you know,
this is some nouvelle vague, let me tell you. You know, and it gets into some of the...
Neo-vague, I guess.
I was making a joke.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, so there was, you know, you some of the logistics of, like, how do you have a... How are you an honor student by day and, you know, a Hollywood hooker by night, you know?
I saw a film about that myself one time back
and
in the 80s.
You know what?
Her name was Angel.
Yes, it was. And she was a more interesting character than this one is. And, you know, eventually her parents find out and because...
How do they feel about it?
Not happy. She has... Because a John dies under her, basically. So the police get involved, and she's outed, and I wanted I didn't want some pat explanation, you know, or any, but just a little something. I mean, it's this movie really just. Here she is, and here's this gigantic shift in tone and her, like, completely changing her life and acting in a completely different way, and we leave it to you to figure out why. And that may work for some people, and you may see it and be like, oh, I enjoyed the enigmatic, you know, whatever to it. I just found it frustrating. So I was not into it.
Baby Belle du jour.
From the Laughing Cow.
Well, now you've got me all intrigued. All
right, well, then go see it.
Because here's the thing. When you come out of an art house film and you're like, eh, it wasn't about anything, it was vague, that just means that I'm going to think it's great.
Uh-huh.
Generally.
Like when I had to explain what The Mystery of Rompo was about to you?
Look, I didn't like that one at all.
Yeah, because you didn't get it.
I don't know that I didn't get it. Maybe I didn't get it.
You didn't get it.
I don't remember.
I remember explaining it to you, and you were going, "Oh, is that what happened?" Of course, I'm having to reach back to the '90s for an example.
That
so
was, what was year was that? 1996,
something like that.
Seven, yeah. Something like that.
It was early in the relationship.
Yeah, when you explained a movie to me once.
How many movies have you explained to me in the subsequent time?
Almost none.
So. It doesn't come up a lot. But every so often, you know, one of us misses something and the other one catches it. It's just how it works.
It's usually you missing things and yeah, catching me because I'm super observant.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
What else did we see? Walk of Shame?
Yes. Before we take the Walk of Shame.
Which is like a terrible thing. It was a shameful walk.
It was pretty shameful. Before we take that walk, do we want to...
Who's our sponsor? We have a sponsor.
We do.
We're making you wait for Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Linoleum Knife is brought to you by The Real Truth, everything you didn't know you needed to know about making an independent film by Reed Martin, former professor at NYU and Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
You listen to this show, unless you're a first-timer. And if you are a first-timer, you know nothing about us. And what you do need to know is that we have sponsors. We're not doing this just for nothing. We've been telling you about this book a lot every week and the dozens of mistakes that The Real Truth can help first-time filmmakers avoid, but it's also an important book for aspiring screenwriters who do not want to direct. That is because The Real Truth will tell you how to protect your screenplay and not allow it to be appropriated or ripped off. What you and your screenwriting friends will learn from reading The Real Truth is that writers are way too trusting and often do many stupid things when it comes to protecting their intellectual property. A lot of aspiring screenwriters will work all weekend or late at night during the week while other people are out doing fun things in their life, or they're doing things that normal people do on the weekends, but those people, the screenwriters, are home working on their screenplays. And then, because they don't know any better, when it comes time, they try to shop their screenplays around, and instead of getting an agent and doing things the correct way, following the industry norms, They email their script all over town in a Microsoft Word file, and you should never ever do that. Here's another mistake. Aspiring screenwriters who work as waitstaff at fancy restaurants in Los Angeles, who are hoping to palm their screenplays on famous actors or directors, they risk not only those wait jobs by handing over that copy of their script at the dinner, with the dinner bill, and maybe one of those handwritten notes that say, call me, but these writers are risking having their screenplays stolen or appropriated because they have no legal proof that a script ever changed hands. A restaurant receipt is not proof of anything, let alone that you gave your screenplay to someone to consider producing. So finally, aspiring screenwriters will often try to save a few bucks by registering their scripts with the WGA, that's the Writers Guild of America, instead of with the Library of Congress. And that is because they think that both registrations confer the same benefits. What you will learn from reading The Real Truth is that this is not the case. A legal, actionable copyright registration, one that a copyright attorney can actually enforce in court, is only conferred by having paid the fee for an official registration with the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., and not with a less expensive WGA registration. They are not the same thing. So, if you are within the sound of my voice and you don't believe any of this, then you need to pick up a copy of The Real Truth and find out how to protect your intellectual property the right way. The book will give you guidance and help you shop your script the right way. It is called The Real Truth. It is from Reed Martin and Favor and Favor. This has been a commercial for that.
Boom. We'll have a link to buy the book on our Facebook page.
That was very hard for me to do.
But you got through it lovely.
I had to read it
lovely.
All. I had to read it all without going off on a variety of tangents. I considered it a little test of myself that I could do that.
Yes.
Like a proper grown person.
Mm-hmm.
Much the same way that I had to test myself this morning when we went to the original Pancake House in Anaheim.
Right.
And I gave myself a sugar test. Could I eat at the original Pancake House in Orange County and not consume 100 grams of sugar?
You actually said, no pancakes, please.
I did.
Even though they came with your order.
I got the cheese omelet with bacon, and those automatically come with pancakes. And I said, no pancakes, please.
Even though you had to pay full price anyway.
Doesn't matter.
No pancakes,
please. It was 10 bucks.
Still.
You'll spend 10 bucks on an omelet anyway.
I know, but it wasn't like, oh, well, would you like fruit instead? It was like, oh, no pancakes.
No pancakes, tough. No pancakes. That's what it was. I do not ever turn down pancakes, but I've been really, really forcing myself to drastically reduce the amount of sugar in my life.
I'm sure we're going to be talking about this
next week when Fed Up opens, okay, which is a documentary about how sugar is cigarettes, and everyone is going to die of sugar.
Well, that if I have to go some way, that's my preferred method.
Walk of Shame.
Walk of Shame
is a movie with 100 grams of stupid. Everything about it is stupid.
I can't figure out...
All stupids live inside Walk of Shame.
I'm a little bit more charitable to this movie than you are.
You're wrong.
only because
yeah.
I admire how game Elizabeth Banks is.
She is that.
I think she really throws herself into this thing.
She does.
The movie does not deserve her, and it is not smart enough for what she's bringing, but she does bring it.
It ain't.
She does bring it.
She tries.
And I laughed a few times.
I laughed from, what's a Pookie? Was that the character's name, Pookie? He was kind of funny.
Yeah.
What else? That's it. That's all else that was funny.
Yeah, it's basically, it's a very sort of watered down after hours. She plays a local TV anchorwoman in Los Angeles. And on the day that she loses her fiancé and this network TV gig that she was up for, she goes out drinking with her friends and goes home with a bartender played by James Marsden, who claims to be a postmodern,
romantic novelist, which doesn't make any sense.
No, and he talks about how, like, you know, he tries to observe the beauty in the world, and Dave said that's not what postmodernists do. Anyway, so then she gets a call in the middle of the night or something from her agent that she's back up for the network gig and she needs to, you know, really knock it out of the park on the show the next day.
Yeah.
She gets locked out of James
Marsden's.
And people
are going to hire her based on some sort of morality clause. That's the whole gist.
Yeah, they talk about
how,
like,
how she's going to get this gig.
About how being,
referring to her as
being a good girl has paid off.
That is a mantra in this movie. I'm a good girl. No, she's a good girl.
Yeah, because
first of all, she's 37. Or yeah, more.
Right.
And that's not a girl.
But by dint of being from Texas, that's
and
supposed
I say
to make
this
her naive.
As the
and
co-host
sheltered.
Of a privileged white male cisgendered podcast, I know better than to be all like, that old girl. Like, I'm from even, you and I are both even actually from the South, more
right.
or less, where people routinely say, that old boy or that old girl,
yeah.
as a you could say that about a 67-year-old person.
Right, right.
But that's a highly contextual thing.
Yes.
It's different from a movie.
Even then, I try to go to gal if I can.
In the workplace, calling someone a good girl
yeah.
is what? It's Mad Men. Like, that's it's terrible.
It is. It's problematic.
No, it's thoughtless.
Yeah.
This is a thoughtless movie.
It is a thoughtless movie. It's directed by, it's written and directed by Stephen Brill, who did Little Nicky.
Which made me laugh.
Which is, see previous episode when Dave talked about how stupid movies make him laugh when he feels guilty about it. He did something else terrible, and he did the I Babe.
The Mighty Ducks.
The Mighty Ducks. Or no, I think maybe like the second Mighty Ducks or something.
No, the Mighty
first
Ducks.
One? Okay. Yeah. And he did the I Babe segment of movie 43, which is one of the weakest
the
ones.
The worst part of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's not doing any better here. So Wacky, you know, she gets locked out of Marsden's apartment. She has no purse. She has no ID. She has no phone. She has no car. Can she get home from downtown Los Angeles in time to do the show?
And does she know her way around the city where she
and,
lives?
And, oh my gosh, yeah. You would think that she had, you think this was The Hangover Part 3, and she, or no, 2. You know, she
One.
Woke up. She woke
All
up in the
them.
Middle of Thailand or something, you know, right. just trying to make her way through Phuket, you know.
Like the guys, it's, like the guys are like, you just need to get on 10th and you need to
Western.
The 10, the intersection where the 10 crosses Western. She's like, the 10 and Western. And I'm sitting there watching it thinking, look, where are the Californians when you need them? Because here's the thing about the Californians. It's all true.
It is.
Except
it's a documentary.
Except for the ridiculous accents.
Mm.
And sometimes even those are true. The constant discussion of directions and
how are you going to get
where
you're
get
going?
Where you're going in Los Angeles is a thing that people do
yes.
all the time. So she would be a part of that.
Yes.
As a professional, you know, young woman in the world
yeah.
of Los Angeles, she would be the kind of person who'd be like, you take the blah, blah, blah to the blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
and I never get on the 10. I go
Beverly all the way down,
yeah.
and then I go up
right.
Crescent Heights. Yeah, no, yeah, you're right. Yeah, so then none of that.
She would know these things, especially she works at KTLA.
Right.
In the movie, it's called KZLA, which is on Sunset.
Yes. She's at Sunset in the 101.
Any fool. Yeah. So she knows better.
Yeah.
This, but because, you know, the movie has to make
relies
her
upon her not knowing anything
about
yeah.
anything. Even her initial bad move is thoughtless because all she needed to do was bang on the door of James Marsden's apartment loudly enough so that he woke up and heard her.
Well, the joke is that she's down. It's like some loft building with a gajillion lofts in it, and she's downstairs, and there's a million call buttons.
I know that, but all she gets locked out of his apartment though, and she could have just like.
Oh, in the
back.
Hallway. Oh, that's true.
All she had to do, the movie would have been over, but all she had to do was be like, hey, I'm locked out, let me in. And he would have eventually woken up and gotten her in.
Right.
And that's the first stupid thing that happens, and then everything else is stupid after.
Yeah.
And they might as well have just called this mansplain, because every time she meets a guy, and without exception, maybe,
except
no, no, no.
Niecy Nash.
Except for Niecy Nash and the homeless lady.
Right.
She only runs into men who never let her speak, never let her explain a thing.
That she is not, in fact, a prostitute, despite the fact that she's wearing a bright yellow clingy mini
dress. She's not even dressed like a prostitute. Have you seen how prostitutes dress? You ever driven down Santa Monica Boulevard at 2 o'clock in the morning? I have.
Oh, yeah.
You know how the prostitutes dress?
Trashier.
Trashier. In a very suggestive, like, I'm for sale for sex kind of way.
Well, and that's...
She just looks like a Kardashian, we've gotten to the point where we decided that the Kardashians dress like whores.
Right.
When in fact they don't. They dress like Kardashians.
Which is a whole other
all
level.
The ladies want to look like Kardashians.
But and one of the funnier things... The
bandage dress is not a whore outfit. It's just a clubbing gear.
In the Pookie scene, there's somebody else, I think it's Skrilla, who points out that she's wearing... it looks like Marc Jacobs.
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah, this movie is... It's dopey,
being too nice.
You could float a premise that made some sense and have it be funny with the performance that Elizabeth Banks is given.
Yes,
but instead you've got her trying really hard to make us buy into this thing that we just can't buy into.
So, ladies, if you are stupid and like a film where a woman is constantly called a prostitute every step she takes,
yes,
and cannot find her own way around a city she lives in.
This is the film for you.
This is great for you. Are you missing the subtlety, wit, and intelligence of the other woman after a week after having seen that feminist film? Are you want something even worse? Walk of Shame.
There you go.
In theaters now. Oh, no. I should say in 50 theaters now nationwide.
And on VOD.
And on demand. So you can watch it in the shameful privacy of your own home.
Exactly. The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yay.
The whole reason we're alive.
Yes. Spider-Man is back. He's got some villains to fight. Mm-hmm. He has three villains to fight.
And he's got to graduate from high school.
But you don't know. I mean, the movie sort of unrolls the villains over time. They don't prop you up with three villains right
now. They never team up or anything.
His big problem at the beginning of the movie
his
big problem at the beginning of the movie is that he's sort of weirdsies with Emma Stone.
Right. Because he promised her dad in the first movie that he would not like drag her into the danger of Spider-Man's life.
Right.
So he's trying to keep his distance, but dang it, they love each other too much.
They super love each other. And that is actually the part of the film that's worth looking at.
Yeah, that's the best stuff.
Mark Webb from 500 Days of Summer, he knows how to make people look like they're super into each other.
Mm-hmm.
He has had some help this time around by
casting two people who are
actually super into each other and who are good at communicating that on screen.
Yeah, there's that thing about... The real couples never have chemistry on camera.
They have broken that curse.
The people who hate each other do.
These two are down for each other, and in an aggressive way, and it shows. And so the movie kind of pulls them apart, puts them back together again, pulls them apart, puts them back together again.
And given what you read about people who have affairs during movies, a lot of those couples do seem hot and heavy on camera.
Right. Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
For instance.
Yeah. You could tell they were banging during the screening, during the filming of that.
You know, depending on which biographies of like Grace Kelly and Audrey Hepburn you read.
Audrey Hepburn. Speaking of Audrey Hepburn, let's do a little digression.
Sure.
Another commercial.
She turns 85 today.
It's her birthday.
Would have turned 85 if she were alive. It is the 85th anniversary of her birth, and this week we will be recording and releasing...
Tomorrow, in fact.
Yes.
We were going to do it yesterday and have it ready for today along with the new podcast, but it was 1,000 degrees in our house.
And we had to close the windows
We had to close everything up to record, even though we keep some of the windows open for some air, and you always hear the dogs barking and the
motorcycles and the
helicopter flying over in the hill.
But for you, we try and keep it quiet. So anyway, yeah. So we didn't tape it yesterday. We're going to do it tomorrow when it's cooler. But we will be recording the latest Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife, and the episode will be devoted to the 1967 romantic comedy drama Two for the Road, starring Audrey Hepburn and Albert Finney, directed by Stanley Donen from a screenplay by Frederick Raphael.
That's right.
It will cost you.
It's
going
to be great.
It will cost you $1.99.
You're going to really love that.
You can PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
You should get on watching this movie first, anyway.
If you haven't already seen it, yeah,
it's a really good film.
So wonderful
and worth your time.
Yes.
And then obviously, our amazing insights
will be worth your time.
Will
as well.
Be worth your $1.99.
So as soon as that goes live, we will post it on our Facebook page and on our Twitter feed, which is Linoleum Cast, and we'll of course have it at linoleum-knife.com. So keep an eye out for that. That will be happening in the next couple days.
Anyway, Audrey Hepburn had sex with lots of people, apparently.
Yes. And yet had romantic chemistry with them.
So they say.
Yes. So just.
I mean, wouldn't you? Oh, you're Audrey Hepburn, you're like, look how cute I am. Check me out, dudes on set. And all the dudes on set are like, yeah, I'm checking you out, Audrey Hepburn.
Well, it's
you're a petite little flower.
I'm going to talk about this during the commentary, but she was very self-conscious about her body because it was the 50s. You know, like Marilyn Monroe was the thing, and she just thought...
She was a little bird.
She's a little sticky bird thing, and of course she is now the style icon and sort of role model of what a majority of women seem to think they need to look like to be glamorous. So, you
slim
know.
Hips, small bosom.
Mm-hmm. A gamine.
But back to Spider-Man.
Yeah. So anyway, the chemistry between...
Although we'd much rather continue talking about Audrey Hepburn. Yeah.
We'll be doing that tomorrow. The chemistry between Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone is terrific, and they are fun to watch, and you wish the movie were sort of like a, you know, kind of postmodern thing where he's a superhero, but
postmodern romantic.
There we go, novel, film, yes. Yeah. Where you know, he's a superhero, but he never actually does anything superheroic, because when he does, it's less interesting, frankly.
I'm not going to take a giant poop all over this movie, like I've been seeing on the internet all weekend long.
There are things
people
in
who
it,
are furiously calling it like garbage and
there are
and
things
worthless.
There are things in it that work, but they are buried between under too much extraneous characters and plot stuff and too much franchise building.
I believe
there's too much time spent in this movie setting us up for the next two or three movies.
I believe you are right about the franchise building problems, and it's what I wrote about in my review at movies.com, mm-hmm. is that there is a tension going on in this film between the desire to make a human movie and the desire to make a corporate movie.
Yeah, an international behemoth.
Corporate movie wins.
Sure.
With a little touch of humanity here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, specifically Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone, but also Andrew Garfield
and
Sally
Field.
Field.
Totally.
The most moving sequence of the film is Sally Field and Andrew Garfield mm-hmm. having this discussion about, like, who your parents really are.
Right.
And it's, I got a little choked up.
No,
like, she's the secret weapon of crying.
Totally.
And that's really a wonderful like moment for her, and a chance for her to remind the world. Oh yeah, you know what? I've got Academy Awards.
Yes,
and
two. Thank you.
So, and they gave them to me for an actual good reason.
Yeah,
yeah. So I wish this had been something else. It is a competently executed Spider-Man product. I enjoyed the action-y bits. I enjoyed
some of them.
They don't distinguish themselves in any way.
Yeah.
It is a film that isn't really about anything.
No.
It doesn't ask any questions. It doesn't critique anything.
It has it has one moment that feels bold in terms of the kind of film that it is, that if you have never read the
Can
comics.
Can you give me a hint as to what you think that was?
That if you have not read the comics, you won't see coming.
I had not read the comics, mm-hmm. and I didn't know that was coming,
uh-huh.
that thing.
Uh-huh.
But that thing happened in the comics in what year? 1973 or
something
four?
Like that, yeah.
Like 40 years ago?
Yes. But
so if we were to say it out loud, it wouldn't really be a spoiler, but we are not going to say it out
correct.
Loud.
Correct. But it's the kind of thing that even...
If you're a dude like me and you don't know anything about Spider-Man and you don't actually have a lot of like dogs in that hunt, you're just going because it's the new Spider-Man movie, at the end you'll think, oh, wow, that is a thing that just happened, and what's going to happen now?
And it's the sort of thing that, just because it happened in the comics, the movies could have very easily...
Ignored it. Saved it for much later.
Right, and they didn't, so that's, you know, I will give them points for that. And I think what's so frustrating about this movie, it isn't that it's this interminable slog from start to finish. It's that it has these individual moments and ideas that are so terrific. There's an ending sequence that calls to mind both Bat Kid and Tiananmen Square that I found really powerful and kind of, you know, that was the other one besides the Sally Field where I felt a little, you
I will know. Say that the little Spider-Man was nice as well. I was down for a little Spider-Man.
But boy, they just, all the other stuff they dump on top. And I mean, Dane DeHaan, an actor I think is so interesting, gets stuck playing this character that just doesn't make any sense. I mean,
just always off on a, like a teen angst bender.
Yeah, well, okay, here's the thing. In the premise of the film, you get...
And Paul Giamatti is being a cartoon character.
Oh, totally. Yeah, he's not even
like
pretending
Saturday
that he is
a Saturday morning Spider-Man cartoon.
He's being like Boris Badenov. But okay, so Dane DeHaan plays Harry Osborn. And in this movie's version of the Osborns, the Osborns, you know, that family, Norman Osborn, you know, played by Chris Cooper, discovers... In his, what, 50s, 60s, that he's got this genetic disease and he's dying from it. There's nothing he can do about it. And then Harry, who is in his 20s, is then suddenly also dying from it. It's like, wait, if it's a genetic disease that you managed to hold off until you were this age, why is your son also now dying now? Like, that makes no sense at all. And it takes you to these... It's an excuse to then lead to this whole plot thing that's stupid. This is a frustrating film. The previous Amazing Spider-Man, which I liked a lot better, was written by actual writers, people like Alvin Sargent and James Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
This one is written by Kurtzman and Orci.
Yes.
Who did, like, the Transformers movies and the rebooted Star Trek. Although I did like the rebooted Star Trek. Yeah. But they, you know, this is more of a blockbuster mentality, and that the film suffers for it.
They know the beats of this sort of thing, and they do it.
Yeah.
And that's what they do in this film, and that's what this film is, and it's nothing else. Nothing other than that.
Right.
Except
when it isn't, and that's when it's...
And now we have, in the world of movies... We have the dominance of superhero stories.
Right.
The same way that we used to have...
Die Hard in a blank.
Yes. Or before that, you know, Westerns.
Sure.
You know, that was the dominant thing in the...
50s.
30s, 40s, 50s. Yeah. Like, how many years were they?
Right.
The dominant story sort of setting.
Mm-hmm.
And... But the thing was, is that a lot of those were just sort of B pictures.
Right.
They weren't asking anyone, unless they were directed by John Ford, they weren't asking anyone to consider them seriously.
Right.
In any real way.
But part of what's happened since Jaws is that what used to be considered B pictures
are
the A pictures.
And now we need each of these things to be an event.
Right.
If this were not meant to be an event, it would simply be a messy 2.5 hours in air conditioning.
Right.
But we demand at each step that they push technology forward,
mm-hmm.
that they push storytelling forward, that they push the canon of these, you know, already conceived characters forward, and that they mean something. We expect them all to mean something.
Now. So we basically want 10 new snowflakes a year.
Kinda. Mm. And so I don't know if that's sustainable.
I'm thinking no.
I would like to think that they can be with proper care and management, but I don't feel them being properly cared for or managed. And so I'm not feeling superhero fatigue, but I am feeling superhero disappointment and ambivalence.
Well, I think that, you know, this was actually the survey on CriticWire this week that I filled out today, and they talked about, like, how do we overcome the idea of superhero fatigue, and what do we do to keep this from just feeling like a glut? And I feel like the most interesting ones of these movies so far have been when they don't hire the sort of typical action guy, Zack Snyder, and instead they go for somebody who can bring something else to it. I mean,
right.
Bryan Singer, pre-X-Men, was the Usual Suspects guy.
Right.
You know, Joss Whedon was the Buffy guy.
Right.
And, you know, the Russo brothers were, you know, the Arrested Development guys, you know, before doing Captain America. And Mark Webb, you know, before doing the first Spider-Man, was the 500 Days of Summer guy. So I think if you can, you know, sort of trust that the action will see to itself, and then you bring in people who know how to create actual characters,
right,
and that we care about and want to see and want to see them interact, then that's when you got something. I mean, I have no cultural baggage, affection, nostalgia, anything for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
Never read the comics. I mean, I vaguely knew who those characters were, but never was interested in them. And I really hated James Gunn's Super. But if this is a movie that takes the multi-million dollar, larger-than-life trappings of a superhero movie as we have come to know it, and turns it into something kind of jokey and self-referential and something else, great. You know, just something different. You know, if this is going to be this established genre that everybody's going to crank them out, and we're going to have a new one every month or every couple of weeks, really, then let's mix it up. Give me a musical superhero movie. Give me something where you are toying with the formula, or else it's just going to be the same dang movie.
Turn off the dark.
I keep wondering if there's ever going to be a film. You know, but mix it up, because otherwise it's you know, we just can't sit through another origin story and another saving the world and another New York falling into the ocean movie. It's like,
ugh. Oh, New York can keep falling into the ocean. I'm okay with that. Everything can keep falling into the ocean.
As long as you do it in a different way. Yeah. You know, I feel like I've seen all the variants. Like,
there's some big disaster movie coming out this summer about a storm that kills everybody, or I don't know, but I'm very excited about that.
Oh, okay.
I've seen clips of the trailer, although I haven't seen the entire trailer, because I was trying not to look. But,
right, right.
Everything gets destroyed. That's it. That's all the movies this week.
That is, yeah.
My DVD recommendation of the week is Ace in the Hole.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming out on a Criterion Blu-ray.
Yes.
This coming week. It stars Kirk Douglas.
Also known as the
Big Carnival.
The Big Carnival. Yeah. Thank you. I was going to say the Big Parade. I knew that wasn't it.
Kirk Douglas plays a reporter who's very cynical, and he seizes upon an opportunity where a man has fallen down into a hole, basically.
A mine, yeah.
And he manipulates the situation so that he can
milk the story
and make a name for himself.
It is, even by the cynical standards of Billy...
It came out in 1951.
Yeah, even by the cynical standards of Billy Wilder, it is an incredibly cynical film, and yet a super prophetic
movie.
Too.
It's a movie about cynicism.
Yeah, that's true, too.
I don't think it's a cynical film.
No, you're right, you're right. It is a movie about cynicism, but it's a movie, it takes it far.
Yeah.
And I would argue that, I mean, yes, like, for network certainly foresaw where television news was going, but if you look at Ace in the Hole and A Face in the Crowd, both of which came out in the 50s, you will find out everything you need to know about mass media in this country.
And what became of it.
and why, what's wrong with it, and how it gets usurped by the wrong people.
So it's really good.
Well, yeah.
I remember seeing it. You dragged me to see it at the New Beverly several years ago.
Yeah. For a long time, it wasn't on video. Like, I don't know if it was some legal thing or what, but you couldn't get it for a long time. But now, Criterion has a Blu-ray coming out, so that's very exciting.
Fresh.
My DVD pick this week is also a Blu-ray and also an issue film, Godzilla versus the Smog Monster.
It is about the ecology.
That's right. Save the Earth.
I think I recommended this once 1 week.
Maybe.
I think this was my rec one.
Godzilla versus Hedorah.
But you can never recommend it enough.
No, and now it's a Blu-ray. And a lot of the Godzilla titles are coming out on Blu-ray this week because of the impending American remake.
After Destroy All Monsters, this is my favorite one.
And Destroy All Monsters isn't coming out on Blu-ray this week, unfortunately. No. It is out of print. But yeah.
Destroy All Monsters is my favorite. Mm-hmm. Then Godzilla versus, as I knew it when I was seven,
the Smog Monster.
Boy, did I love that movie. And every time they would show it or Destroy Monsters, I was back at the kiddie matinee seeing it. It is the most psychedelic of all the Godzilla movies.
Japanese teenagers doing the Watusi.
In the discotheque. There's a song about pollution that's real catchy. It is... There's animation in the middle of it. There's an animated sequence in the middle of it. It's crazy. So, Hedorah is one of the best, nastiest monsters.
Yeah, it's almost the predecessor to the poop demon in Dogma.
I love it. I love it so much.
Despite the fact that Medveds put it in the 50 worst films of all
time. They are wrong. Sorry, boss.
Yes. No.
Harry.
It is fun.
Harry's one of my bosses.
Yes.
He's not listening, but...
No, but he's great, but he was wrong about this. So, yeah. Out on Blu-ray this week from Section 23. Letters.
We don't have any letters this week. We just have...
I sent you one.
I know. We just have top 10 lists.
Oh, well...
Attached to letters. What I do each week now is I read all the letters that we get, and then one top 10 list, because I don't want to overload everybody with top 10 lists.
Sure.
There was a time when we were doing that. You gonna sneeze?
How does that work?
I took it right out of you.
How did you make me not sneeze by pressuring me?
That's go so ahead, come on. Sneeze, princess. Come on, do it.
Thank you, Great Santini. I'm not sneezing now. Well done.
Hi, Dave and Alonzo. Love the show, guys. Dave's glorious stream of conscious rants are now a staple of my weekend. Did you know that's what I was doing?
Yes. It's like when you walk down the street with the shopping cart and...
Performance art.
Yell about the communists.
Yeah, it's my performance. Mm. I'm making you think, oh, that's what a ranting person would do.
Because you're postmodern.
I'm taking it a step away from the actual
process. Because you're a postmodern
process.
Romantic novelist, yeah.
Since I love having things I like taken apart in excruciating detail by my intellectual superiors, is that us?
Mm-hmm.
Don't think so much about us being your intellectual superiors.
Let's get crazy here.
Because I'm an idiot. I want the world to know and understand this.
This person could be the elusive, stupidest listener.
He might be our stupidest listener.
So you never know.
We don't know, yeah. I thought I would send you guys two lists. The first is my top 10 of all time. The second is my favorite James Bond movies. Please note that while I am a big fan of the series, there's only 8 movies I can say I have a real affection for. Okay, here's his top 10.
Okay.
Rear Window.
Great.
Die Hard.
Sure.
Le Boucher. Which one is that?
The Butcher, right? I don't know that one. I haven't seen it anyway.
Pause it. We're going to look it up.
Hang on.
Let's pause the podcast. We can look.
Okay, so it's a Chabrol thriller.
Yeah, we haven't
seen it, but we will.
Yeah, neither one of
that.
Us have seen it. Now we're going to see it because it's got Jean Yan in it. Yan A, is that what you said?
I think it's Yan.
Yan.
Yeah. And Stefan O'Dron.
He was all right. Jean Yan.
I think I've only ever seen him.
Not to get too gay about it here.
I've only ever seen him in Weekend, I think.
Imitation of Life.
I assume you mean the Douglas Sirk one.
Well, what else would he mean?
There's another one.
To Be or Not to Be.
I assume you mean the Ernst Lubitsch one.
But what other one would you mean?
The Mel Brooks one.
Oh, okay.
These are movies that have been remade.
Let the Right One In.
Okay.
In a Lonely Place.
Ooh, yeah.
An American in Paris. Come on.
I find that movie so stodgy. I mean, there are some great moments, but it's...
Sid Charisse. I know you don't like her.
No. Leslie Caron.
Oh, Leslie Caron. See, here's what your intellectual superiors are doing.
Yeah, you've seen a French movie we've never heard of, and fine, whatever.
The Big Lebowski.
I've still never seen it.
Assault on Precinct 13.
I assume you mean the John Carpenter one.
Dude, you're 100% knife.
Sure, absolutely.
You are 100% knife. Here's his Bond movies.
Okay.
We're giving you Le Boucher because we haven't seen it yet, but now we're going to see
we
it.
We trust, yeah. Yeah.
From Russia with Love.
Okay, yeah.
Goldfinger.
Yeah.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Yes.
Live and Let Die.
Yeah.
For Your Eyes Only.
Yeah.
The Living Daylights.
If that's going to be one of your 8 Bond films, all right, go on. What else?
GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Casino Royale.
I assume you mean the remake, although I love the original.
Skyfall.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
Really? Okay, would you put Living Daylights on your top 8?
No, which one was Grace Jones in? That was a...
View to a Kill.
Yeah, View to a Kill's in there.
I would probably put Thunderball in there. Or,
The very first one I ever saw was The Man with the Golden Gun.
Oh, A Spy Who Loved Me should be in there.
I was a child. I was a child, and I saw The Man with the Golden Gun. Like, I went to a theater, kid matinee. They had
a kid matinee?
Instead of the kid matinee, they had that.
Oh, I see.
Like, they didn't have the kid matinee that weekend. It was
so
like,
you just went.
This was going to be such a big movie that they just showed it all day.
Right.
So I just went. And I remember thinking to myself, this is dirty.
Like, I should not be seeing
grown-ups. Like, I'm going to get in trouble. No one was with me.
Right. But you knew.
But I just had this idea, like, I'm not going to tell anyone that there's naked things. People are doing it in this. Like, it seemed very dirty.
And theme song by Lulu.
Theme song by Lulu.
I think I've told this story on the podcast before.
I dug that theme song,
about
too.
What was supposed to be my first Bond movie and then what was my first Bond movie. It was going to be The Spy Who Loved Me.
Yes.
And then...
Who got...
Fernando saw it first
and said, no.
Told my parents, oh no, not appropriate. He shouldn't see that. So my my first Bond in the theater.
Like, never say never again.
Moonraker. That was my first Bond in the theater. Moonraker.
I saw all the Sean Connery ones on TV when I was a kid.
Yes, the ABC Sunday Night Movie would always show those. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep up the great work, guys. One of these days, I'll scrape together the gold to buy one of your commentaries. You better go get one of those gold bullion
199
cubes
pennies
that you have located in your bunker.
Goldfinger!
Your constant references to The Apple, a movie I've never seen, makes me want to check it out. I'm a big fan of Golden Globus's Life Force. This sounds like another great helping of WTF pudding. All the best, Tim. P.S., I am from New Zealand, and I'd like to respond to that person who said that New Zealand is filled with atheists. It is. It's so great. Come and visit anytime.
Well put. I'm going to give you an 88% on the Bond list, because really, Living Daylights in your top 8, I'm not having it.
All right. That's it.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it. Oh, we're just doing one of these a week.
Goodness.
Man.
Okay.
You should go to KCRW.com and go to the Press Play.
Press Play with Madeline Brand.
We were on her show.
On Friday, May 2nd.
And we said a few of the same things that we have said during this podcast.
But we also talked about other
things. We say them in fresh, new, vital ways.
And in a much better sound studio.
With a nice, fancy lady
yes.
as our host.
Who is perhaps going to be on the show soon, with any luck.
Maybe.
If things go as we hope.
Yeah, I don't know that you should be selling
I'm
that.
I'm not promising anything. She's a busy... professional, but right. maybe just, she'll make her way in here. Yeah. Who knows?
But here is a thing that we can talk about pre-selling.
What's that?
Linoleum Knife t-shirts.
Yes, we can.
How much did we charge for them the first time?
$20
$20
in the United States.
In the United States. If you live in another country, and that includes Canada, I'm sorry, it costs a freaking paycheck to send it to any other country but the United States. I don't know why this is, but it's a lot of money. So, if you live in another country and you're interested in buying a t-shirt, and you don't mind that it's going to cost a lot to ship it to you, go ahead, contact us at...
linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
That is correct. linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Tell us what country.
Tell us what country you're in and what size you need. Now... They are costing, what, $19.99 or $20 even?
We're saying $20.
$20 even for the Linoleum Knife t-shirt. It's a black shirt with the white letters. It just says linoleum knife on it. It's very stark.
You can look at the photos on our Facebook page.
Scroll down, scroll down, scroll down. We may repost one this week. So
well, and if you go to the photo album, they're right
oh,
there.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. But I'll repost
them. Listeners later. Have modeled their shirts
yes,
for us.
They have.
Are those all in the photo album?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Now, here's the situation. You should also keep in mind that you do not want to be in a hurry
yes.
for this shirt, and here's why.
These are pre-orders.
These are pre-orders. And once we get enough pre-orders, like 20 pre-orders, we're going to order
a new batch of shirts.
Yeah. So once we get about 20 pre-orders, we're going to order the batch of shirts, and that'll take a couple weeks.
Right.
So it's going to take a bit to get you your shirt, but you'll get your shirt.
Yes.
And for all you people who have a shirt that you were supposed to get in December and then it got lost in the mail because of Christmas or whatever, I hope you did get your shirt. If you never did, contact us. We had like 3 people not get their shirts.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, and we had to send out new ones and make sure it went priority and gotcha. With the tracking and all that stuff. But those folks got their shirts.
The guys get shirts.
The guys get shirts. And so that's a Paul Anka reference. Anyway, $20 pre-order. Linoleum Knife shirts. Get it.
Yeah. PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
And yes.
Let us know if we need to ship it outside the United States and let us know what size you want.
Yes.
There's some, they pretty much have a broad range of sizes, this place that we get them from.
Yeah.
So I think extra small to triple X.
Yeah.
So triple XL. So let us know what you need and we will get you taken care of. We're yes. very excited to be offering these once again. And sorry for the delay in that.
I'm not sorry.
So yeah, so
I'm so apologetic.
So we're taping this on Sunday. We're hoping on Monday night or Tuesday to be posting our Two for the Road extra episode, and
yes.
we'll let you know when that goes on sale as well. In the meantime, visit our friends online. Check out ChristyLemire.com. If you are a Sirius XM listener, there's Rotten Tomatoes Radio on Tuesdays and Thursdays with Matt Atchity and Gray Drake. There's the Frank DeCaro Show, and there's Derek and Romaine. Gray and Matt also have the new Rotten Tomatoes podcast, which
yeah.
you can hear for free at iTunes. Also out there in the podcast universe is Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion cast, the Schmoes Know, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, the Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch. We want to thank Blue for the theme music for our program.
Thank you,
you
Blue.
Can find out more about his new CDs and awesome projects at Bluetopia, BLEUTOPIA.com. You can subscribe to this show for free at iTunes and leave us a review there. That would be lovely. You can also stream us at Stitcher Radio or at thelounge.com. You can also stream the show at our Facebook page, which you should go and like, Linoleum Knife Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at TVTag.com. And again, our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Send us your questions, your comments.
You know, you can follow us individually on Twitter and
That's
Facebook
true.
As well.
That's true. You can follow me on Twitter at A.Duraldi, and you can follow Dave at D. Leland White, all one word.
Leland is my middle name.
Yes, and
quite a handsome middle name, I might add.
You can easily find me on Facebook, because I'm the only Alonzo Duraldi on Earth, as far as I can tell, and then you can find Dave from my page if you want to friend us there. And yeah, you can PayPal us $1.99 at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com for our current extra episodes of The Apple and Clue, and in the next couple days we'll also have Two for the Road available. And you can PayPal us $20 if you want to pre-order a Linoleum Knife t-shirt.
Yeah, that's it.
Am I leaving anything out?
No.
Excellent. So
we're done.
We will catch you next
Stop
time.
Stop talking. We're finished.
I just said we'll catch
Shh.
You. We'll catch you Shh. Next time.
Goodbye.